There is something very strange indeed going on at the bottom of the world. And I began looking at it yesterday when this man called, Richard C. Hoagland. Richard, unwind it for them.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening.
Well, you know, actually, I called you a few weeks ago, and I told you there was something funny going on. That was long before all this medical stuff, and I said, just stand by. When we're ready, we'll have a conversation.
That's right.
And then yesterday, you know, we were ready because things have really wound up to an interesting, even bizarre turn of events. About 2 weeks ago, there were some news reports that the doctor at the South Pole itself, at the Amundsen Scott base, was in medical extremis. He apparently had passed a gallstone and had come down with something called pancreatitis, which is an after effect of that problem.
Yeah, the second doctor, by the way.
Exactly. This is the one that replaced the doctor who had to come out because of the breast cancer
yes.
a couple of years ago,
right.
Dr. Nielsen. Anyway, it's a pretty bad place to be at the South Pole as the winter is setting in. There's no way to get out. You're hundreds and hundreds of miles from the nearest other human beings. There's only about 50 of you there. You know, it's I'm actually watching on the website the live reports from people like 70 South, which is a reporting service down there, and you can see the live temperature. It's minus 96.
What?
At the South Pole as we're talking right now.
Minus 96
96
Fahrenheit.
Below Fahrenheit as we're talking.
Well, I don't...
And it's dark.
How does anything at all fly there?
Well, that's the problem. They have never tried to fly in this late in the season. I mean, winter officially begins in February
right.
on the continent. So there are no flights in for like 4 or 5 months from February to whenever 4 or 5 months is in the future. So for them to fly in April... toward the end of April now, to rescue anybody is extraordinarily unusual. And the only other example we ever had was Dr. Nielsen a couple of years ago because of her breast cancer. Well, as we're looking at this story and we're kind of wondering what's going on, you know, how can you have lightning strike twice, you know, in the same place only a couple of years apart?
Yes.
Suddenly another story comes out that we got 4 sick guys at McMurdo, which is the biggest American base on the edge of the continent, several hundred miles away from the South Pole proper.
4 sick guys.
4 sick guys.
Only this time, they won't give any information about what's wrong.
No. No information about what they've come down with. They're claiming privacy. I mean, these are people that, even though they're private contractors, they work for a company called Raytheon Polar Services, which is a division of the big, mega, high-tech giant Raytheon Corporation, which does a lot of work for the DOD
sure.
and the U.S. government all
sure.
over the world, like EG&G used to.
Sure.
Still does. But they're not giving out any information on what's wrong with them, just that they need an airplane to come and pick them up.
Urgent medical care,
urgent
emergency.
Medical, and so the original idea was that they were going to send 2 Hercules aircraft, one to McMurdo and one to the South Pole. And they looked at the situation vis-a-vis the South Pole and realized that it was too dangerous for the C-130s that they normally fly in there to fly this late in the season,
mm-hmm.
that the hydraulics would freeze, the fuel will freeze, engines will seize up, pistons will crack. So they decided to substitute 2 small airplanes called de Havilland Otters that are apparently piston-driven, and they fly at lower altitude, and they have a different fuel requirement, and they have fewer hydraulics, and they can make it in this kind of weather. And they were going to now fly a Hercules and a McMurdo from New Zealand, from the Royal New Zealand Air Force, to pick up the 4 guys that were simultaneously ill hundreds of miles away from the South Pole.
Now, this story gets even weirder, folks, but maybe we should back up a little bit. You told me there was a magnetic anomaly at the South Pole, huh?
Well, this is why I called you weeks ago, because I've been watching the Antarctic for years. I have hired people to actually go to the National Archive and do research, spend months there literally sifting through documents and papers
right.
and files.
I know. What have you found?
Well, Graham Hancock and I, and some others, the Rand Flemmath and many others, think that Antarctica could be Atlantis. That if the planet, if the Earth we're sitting on, actually undergoes polar excursions, oblique at each changes in space.
Then the poles change.
The poles don't change, but the orientation of the poles relative to the sun changes. It's
yes,
a very
yes.
important distinction.
Sure.
There was a study done at the Rand Corporation many, many, many years ago, And in fact, I had the chief scientist visit me back when I was just this young, brash kid at the museum in Springfield, Massachusetts, even before my Cronkite days, who came 3,000 miles to visit me and lay out this report on planets with changing obliquity shifts that had been done by the RAND Corporation. It was the most bizarre thing. Looking back now, I say, what in the world does somebody know, and why do they want me to know it? And the idea is that if instead of being tilted over 23.5 degrees like we are now,
yes,
if the Earth was ever straight up and down relative to the sun,
right,
the Antarctic would be a temperate continent.
Right.
You would have grass and lush trees and flowing rivers and lakes, and it would be temperate. You could actually live there. The equator would be too hot, but the poles, the North and South Pole, would be temperate. Now, there's nothing in the North Pole but water, so you'd have to swim a lot. But the South Pole is a huge continent. In fact, if you look at it from the Plato perspective, it's a continent surrounded by the world ocean. It fits beautifully the idea of Atlantis. So we've been looking, and I've been digging, and there's almost no information. In January of this year, January 18th, a group from Columbia University did a very meticulous aerial survey with one of these de Havilland otters, which is the workhorse of the polar expeditions. And they flew at 1,000 feet back and forth 36 times, 4 hours a day, 36 times, over this area called Lake Vostok.
Why?
Which is a huge lake found under the ice in the mid-90s.
Why did they do that?
Because they were looking for gravitational, magnetic, and radar anomalies under the ice.
Mm-hmm.
Under this ice, the south part of which the Russians stuck a base in 1957 by, quote, coincidence, they have found in the last 5-6 years the biggest lake found on Earth in the last 100 years. And it's under 2 miles of solid ice, but the lake is liquid. And people from NASA showed up on Ted Koppel a few years ago when this first broke, and they were all excited because they saw this as a test bed for drilling through the ice and putting little submersibles down in the oceans of Europa, the moon of Jupiter. Now, the neat part about this lake is that if it's really been isolated for thousands, if not millions of years, like all the scientists think, then there could be a whole ecosystem down there completely separate and evolving independently of all the rest of us up here.
In other words, it's like another planet.
Exactly, except it's more accessible, it's cheaper.
Gotcha.
And you can get there and test things before you go to Jupiter and test them on that big ocean.
Uh-huh, he says.
So there were plans. NASA had given grants to JPL. There was a very busy division headed by a guy named Frank Carsey at JPL, busily developing a whole new breed of sterile technology to drill down through the ice and to sample what's in this lake, which is, as I said, the size of Lake Ontario. It's almost 150 miles long, but in places it's 3,000 feet deep, Art. It's got sediments at the bottom. It's got all kinds of records of what's happened to the Earth and to the pole. And for all of this, it would be a treasure trove unparalleled in modern science to get a pristine...
So there's a good chance then they were doing core sampling or water sampling if they could get down who knows what they're doing.
The Russians had drilled to within a few hundred feet as of a couple years ago, and then they stopped because the current drilling technology uses, you know, core tubes and bores and drill pipe, and
yes,
you know, you've seen all these things on TV.
Right.
And they also use kerosene to basically lubricate the drill pipe. Can you imagine the world's worst oil spill? You have this pristine environment. You break through with your drill core, and you flood it with 2 miles of kerosene. So they were developing at JPL a totally new technology that would melt its way down through the ice, sealing the ice behind it, and then release a little submarine that would communicate by radio and cable back to the ground station up on the ice 2 miles above. Up until this year, after the magnetic anomaly that was found in the survey on January 18th of 2001 was found, an anomaly which is bigger than most known anomalies on Earth, all right? I could give you numbers, but everybody would glaze over, so I won't.
Thank you.
What happened was that suddenly NASA stopped its grant to JPL to continue to develop the probe to go down into the ice with sterility. Safely.
Why?
We don't know. There was a peculiar, bizarre story that came out of JPL in February that a spokesperson had claimed in front of press people, we haven't been able to confirm this, that their project had been taken over by the national, by the NSA, the National Security Agency.
What? What?
Yes.
Now, wait a minute. We're talking about International Antarctic, right?
That's right. And this is a Russian base at the other end of this lake.
Okay, what would the NSA be doing down there?
Well, obviously the NSA they eavesdrop on everybody all over the world. Remember that big listening project?
Oh, I know all about the NSA. I just don't feature them down there in the Antarctic.
Well, if the intelligence agencies have been intrigued with artifacts and other unusual anomalies, our history, things on other planets, etc., it's logical that they might be interested in something like this.
Anyway, here's what to bear in mind for this discussion, folks. Something is going on down there. Now, Richard just finished telling you this incredible area of water down below that would have evolved virtually separately. It'd be like going to another planet, like crashing through the ice on Europa and, you know, figuring out what's down there, what kind of whatever.
That's the mainstream model.
Yeah, okay.
For those of us who look at the margins of reality and always ask questions, what are they really trying to tell us? If the Earth did experience a polar flip 13,000 years ago, then Antarctica used to be a verdant continent, a temperate continent, because the poles are straight up and down.
Sure.
Then on the banks of this lake, like on many other lakes around the world, there may have been civilization.
Sure.
That's what Hancock and I and others have been looking for, is evidence that somebody might have lived there and left pieces and artifacts and remains of that previous high-tech epoch. So when this anomaly was reported, and it's been reported now not just on the Internet but in Scientific American, there are stories from the Antarctic Sun, which is the official newspaper of the National Science Foundation down there. You know, there are quotes from recognized geologists like Robin Bell, no relation, I guess, Art, Columbia. I mean, there's a lot of excitement. She has a 4-year grant from the NSF to continue her studies, and this was her first big survey to find out what the lake was really all about. If the lake was once temperate and liquid in an open air, in a verdant continent situation, not frozen like it is now, then possibly on the shores there would have been remains of settlements or villages or a city. So as soon as this anomaly got published, I said to myself, oh my God, because this type of anomaly and the size, we're talking an anomaly which is 60 by 40 miles on a side, Art.
Gigantic.
Gigantic, but as big as Los Angeles,
all right,
in other words.
But
it's like a city.
If
you had metals structures and skyscrapers.
Yep, yep.
Now, the ice doesn't come all the way down to the surface. They found from seismic soundings that the ice is actually melted in a dome that slopes up over the lake because the lake is warm. They've been able to measure with thermal scans from altitude, satellite and aircraft.
And what do they find?
The lake is between 55 and 65 degrees Fahrenheit.
You've got to be kidding.
No.
Well, obviously you're not.
No, this is warm water.
That is a temperature at which life could exist.
A very nice life could exist.
Sure.
And what it does is it melts the ice in a dome over it.
Gotcha.
So there's several thousand feet of clear air or clear space between the lake surface and where the ice sheet begins, which is then 2 miles thick.
Okay.
I mean, this is like right out of science fiction. It's like out of you know, the most remarkable fantasy you can imagine, except it's all for real. So here's what we're proposing. Here's one of the ideas.
No, wait a minute. We left off at four people who were sick.
At McMurdo.
Which is really, it's crazy they wouldn't tell us what's wrong, because they have with the two doctors. Now they're citing privacy, and there's four that are sick. Late news, Richard, as you well know, has it now that 11 or 12 are coming out.
As of yesterday, they suddenly upped the total number of extractees to 12.
Why? What? Of course, we don't know.
Well, there are two possible reasons, all right? And this is where we're going to slop over, obviously, in the next half hour. So
yeah,
let me start the theory now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's assume that the medical emergencies are real.
Yes.
How could you get two simultaneous emergencies at two different bases hundreds of miles apart? The answer is, if they came in contact with something common that infected them both. Now, if you know anything about the Antarctic, folks, you know that it's one of the most sterile places on the planet. Ever since the first expeditions have gone down there, they have come back with tales about how they never get colds, they never get flu, they never get sick, because no germs and microbes and viruses can live.
Can't live down there.
In that environment.
And of course, people are very carefully screened medically with blood tests, all the rest of it, before they go down.
And they're even quarantined for a few days when they first arrive.
Right.
Just in case they brought some little guys from
home.
Right,
right.
So this is so anomalous, and there have been 50 years, half a century or more, of steady back and forth commerce and travel and expeditions and research going on, and nothing like this has ever happened. So that right away says there's something different going on now than has ever gone on before. So here's our model. Suppose somebody jumped the gun and decided for whatever reason they had to get through that ice and get to the source of the anomaly underneath 2 miles at the northern end of Lake Vostok. If they didn't do it with proper precautions, then whatever they brought up, if it wasn't quarantined, might have infected them. And like any other disease, it would go from person to person to person, vector to vector to vector, and you would wind up with some kind of outbreak. And you would have the scenario that we are seeing tonight with two separate rescues from two separate bases under extremely difficult conditions for aircraft to fly in safely, with risks to air crews and pilots and medical personnel, but they have to get these people out.
Richard, let's, for a second, you're imagining the Andromeda strain, sort of. So
basically, it's that scenario.
Yeah, basically.
Or the scenario from 2001.
Well, one scenario at a time. If there really was an out-of-control infection, and it was life-threatening, and I assume they don't go in with airplanes for anything less at this time of year, right?
Right.
Then wouldn't the authorities consider other options as well? In other words, if you've got something brand new, this is all just speculation, folks, but if you've got something brand new, would you really want to cart it into New Zealand?
Mark, you put your finger on the problem with this whole story, because the last thing you want to do is to bring those people to a terminus that will communicate it to the rest of the world.
Although you would certainly want samples of whatever it is, so you could begin going to work on some sort of level 4 or 5, whatever they call it, secure facility.
But it's very difficult to bring people out and keep them under quarantine, under that kind of quarantine, particularly if they have something that you've never seen before and you're very worried about it. But what you would do, if you were really smart, is to quarantine them. McMurdo is a basically self-contained facility. It has a very good hospital. All right, it has to, because for 5 months these people, 250 of them, that winter over the whole dark time, they are stuck there.
They can't get out. So anything short of a cancer or something along those lines,
exactly,
would be able to be dealt with at that level of a facility, right?
This has to be infectious if it's real. So what is it, and why are we bringing it back to civilization if, in fact, that's what we're
and
really
why
doing?
Why won't we say what's wrong with these people that are coming back?
Exactly.
All right, everybody, hold on. So you see what I mean when I say something is really wrong at the bottom of the world. I think if you follow the trail, and you're welcome to, we'll give you some websites. You'll find out yourself. I'm Art Bell.